College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. They produced some of the finest talent in Atlanta sports radio history.
Get over it!
Covered the best teams this city has to offer.
Going to bed and taking a nap.
And now, it's time to take their turn at the mic.
Wah, 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 wah.
It's time for The Other Side of the Glass with Chris Thomas on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, here's Chris.
Oh, what's up, Atlanta? How's everybody doing? It is a drop-dead gorgeous morning here in the great city of Atlanta and the great state of Georgia, and I am thrilled to be hanging out with you for the next 3 hours right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, I got myself a little treat, and I'm glad she's here because I'm going to need her help coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. That is the great and talented Noel White is subbing in for my man Eric Slaughter today. Noel, I need your advice. I got something coming up in the next couple of weeks. Well, it's actually two things. And they're within a very short distance of each other. And I'm facing a conundrum. And the goal here is not to be outdone and shown and belittled by my girlfriend. I need to maintain a status quo. Noel, I've set a precedent as a good boyfriend so far. And I'm up against the clock. And coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, I need you to put your relationship cap on. We're going to open up the therapy couch. I'm going to open up the phone lines and the text line. And I need all of y'all to help your boy out. Because I have a real good chance of screwing something up. And I really don't want to. Because my girl's been nothing but great. But it's one of those things, Noel, where that men aren't traditionally good at, which is like reading through the lines and reading through the answers of, oh no, this is fine. We can definitely do this way. And I'm like, are you for real? Or am I supposed to know by the tone of your voice that what you actually mean is blank, blank, blank? So I'm excited to get into that. Well, honestly, I'm not excited to get into it, but I'm excited to have somebody here, an intrepid producer today that can help me out in my time of need. The sunshine is out. It is. Today, it's a beautiful day. Couldn't have drawn it up any better. It's going to be in the mid-60s. Sun is shining. It's just a perfect, perfect day. Not a perfect day for the Hawks. Not a perfect week for the Hawks. Not a perfect month for the Hawks. Not a perfect season. Five seasons. I mean, really, if we're going to talk about it. 404-726-0929. Here's the deal. Usually, you guys know on a Saturday, again, Chris Thomas, Other Side of the Glass. Noel's hanging out with me. I'm with you till 1. Caleb Johnson joined you then. He's actually going to join us in the 11 o'clock hour to talk some Hawks as well. I got a very special guest coming up next segment, David Sampson, host of the Nothing Personal podcast, former Marlins team president, MLB insider. So I want to talk to him about some Braves, and he had an event going on later this afternoon, so he was only able to join us early. So usually you guys know on my Saturday shows, I almost always leave the first couple of segments for me and you. But right now I got about 10 minutes to take your calls. 404-726-0929. The question's simple. Should the Hawks try to patchwork this thing this season? Should they whip out the Band-Aid and just stick a whole mess of them on an open wound? Or should we just call this what it is, right? This season is not going to be what we all hoped it would, right? What do you think? Or do you say turtle? No, you're wrong. There's still half a season left, buddy. Let's try to get a Brandon Ingram. Let's try to get, you know, a big man in here, Nurkic. Let's see what we can do. Because maybe with the way Trey's playing, should have been an all-star. With the way that Risa looks, with the way that Hunter looks, you know, you end this seven-game losing streak, you snap out of it, you make a big addition, and then you try to get back in this thing. So what do you think? 404-726-0929. Should the Hawks try to patchwork this thing? Here's the problem with it. Here's the downside. Noel very astutely said this towards the end of Sam and Greg as they were dreaming a little wide-eyed and bushy-tailed about the Hawks as well. Don't have a ton of money. Don't have a ton of picks. So if you're going to do it, you got to be really smart about it, and you absolutely cannot find yourself in a DeJounte Murray situation where you grossly overpay for somebody. Can't do it. Because then it's, you know, the gloves are off and it's a total mess. But if you can swing a Brandon Ingram, and they're willing to give you a decent market price for it, is it a bad idea? Should you take a swing? That's what I want to ask you. So tell me, 404-726-0929. Hawks fans, you want to see him go for it, try to salvage this season, or is the smarter move to sort of chalk this season up for what it is and say, listen, at the end of the day, it is what it is. You lose your second best player for the year. You're in the middle of a seven-game swoon. I'm not going to try to push the envelope. I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, let's mortgage some of the future to try to make a play-in seed, or, you know, if you catch fire, maybe try to go for the sixth seed. Why? Well, for what? You know, just to say you did it? I don't think that's the Hawks' long-term goal. So I would, if it was me, I would just say, listen, we sort of are where we are. Let's see what we have. Let's not sell the farm. Let's not mortgage the future. Let's not put ourselves in a position to potentially set us back even further. But I understand if you feel the other way. Because listen, guys, it's going to be a long march towards the end of the season if this is what it's going to be, right? So maybe why not? Why not get yourself in a position where you can say, hey, we are going to do whatever we can to win, because we're an NBA franchise and we need to do our due diligence and do our duty by the fans and by everybody that wears an Atlanta Hawks jersey to do what's best for the franchise, even if it's short term. So I understand both sides of the issue. But at the end of the day, is it realism or is it optimism? Which line are we going to go down, right? Which path are we going to cross for the Atlanta Hawks, as we haven't even hit the All-Star break yet? Trae Young gets snubbed for the All-Star team again. And here we are, the Hawks on a seven-game losing streak. And their season is in the balance right now. Some probably want to argue and say, Turtle, it's already over. All right, well, technically, it's not, because you just have too many damn games left. And as much as I just said that I'm on team pragmatism here, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I don't want to sit here and watch 40 more games of this, man. Like, as much as it's going to be nice to watch Dyson Daniels and Risa Shea and Trae Young all further develop their game, DeAndre off the bench, who's become the best sixth man in the NBA, I don't want to sit here and watch that for 40 more games. Do you? But at the end of the day, which side of the double-edged sword are you on? It sucks that it is this way, and nobody thought it was going to be this way. But again, the injuries are just, it's what it is. That's the Hawks' bugaboo. It's been the Hawks' bugaboo, and it looks like it's going to continue to be the Hawks' bugaboo. So 404-726-0929. Which direction should the Hawks go? Should they stand pat? It is what it is. Develop the youngsters? Or is there too much season left and you got to do something? Whether it's Nurkic, whether it's Brandon Ingram, or whether it's somebody else. Let's start with Skip in Decatur. Skip, what do you think?
What's going on, Turtle? How you doing, sir?
What up, Skip?
What's up, what's up? Yo, man, I was on the fence about this thing, but you got to look at it, too. If we go ahead and it is what it is, now we're going to make San Antonio better. We're going to make that trade look better. I'd rather make it kind of worse. I say we got four players. You got the two centers, you got Roddy, and you got Bogey. And then you got a couple second-round picks that I think we can give away or whatever. But I think right now, because the Lakers look like they finished, they going to win. And Sacramento look like they finished. They finished tank the season, so we won't get that pick. So I say let's just go ahead and make this thing better, man. You got four players. You got a couple second-round picks, which second-round picks really don't matter, you know. But I say let's go ahead and do this thing, man. Get Ingram, or you get the Utah center, man. Let's do something, man, because like I said, right now you don't have but like two scores. You got – if Rich ain't coming to his own, there'll be three, but we still need – Ingram just for 1 year. Let's run with it, man. Let's go for it because J.J. won't be back the next year. So let's see what we got with Ingram, man, and if we want to sign up for next year and just make this team a little deeper or whatever – let's run with it, man. Let's go, Hall.
All right.
Let's not tank the season, man.
Yeah, Skip, I love it. I love the positive energy. And that's one side of the fence here, right? Skip's 100% right, and I thank you for the phone call. Right? Why not? There's still half a season left, guys. Like, why just put it in the tank? Like, why just essentially say, you know, this year's over, when technically it's not? And who knows? If you bring in a Brandon Ingram or a Nurkic or somebody, they could be a spark. They could provide maybe not all of, because I don't think anybody can, but some of what Jalen Johnson was providing. So I think Skip makes great points, and I appreciate him listening. I wouldn't do it at the same time, unfortunately, because I hate to say it so bluntly like that, but it's true. Like, so what? Like, are we really going to be satisfied at the end of the year if, like, Noel, if the Hawks get Brandon Ingram and then they finish as the seventh seed, are you going to be happy?
No, I'd have to be the sixth seed. But, it's tough. Own your picks that makes this the difficult decision. Like, because I've been thinking about it since John been saying it the past 2 weeks. Like, you know, if Johnson's hurt, then it gives them an out not to do anything. And I see it on that side. But on the other side, it's like tanking yourself doesn't do you any good right now. So you got to salvage something. I don't know. They're, as always, they are stuck between a mid-rock and a mid-hard place.
I agree with you, but I just don't think they're going to be a six seed no matter what.
And that's what you have to look at. Like, if we do this, is it really going to be advantageous? And if not, then you're back to your point. Why are we doing any of it?
It's advantageous from an optic standpoint.
Right.
From the standpoint of you got to give the fans a reason to come to State Farm. You got to give the fans a reason for optimism. And at this point, with the way this team, not only that they've lost, but the way that they've looked, they need a spark. They look like sad puppies out there the last couple of games.
Yeah, they've just been – it's like we've seen the high of what they can be, and now we're at the low of the low. But I don't know if you can get by in this city anymore with the razzle-dazzle. I don't know if you can give us any more razzle-dazzle and it satisfies or satiates your fan base. You might be beyond that part of it, too. And that's why I say they're stuck between a mid-rock in a mid-hard place, because it's not a town that's not necessarily used to having nothing, but it's also not a town that's used to having, like, the pinnacle of the top.
No, definitely not.
So,
I mean,
exactly. Yeah. So it's like, can you still sell me is good enough to be okay?
No.
Can you still sell this city that?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Why I'm like, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Like, what can you do? You can't manufacture winning, but you can't. There's only so much tap dancing we can do also around this.
No, you're absolutely right. And we'll get back into this later on in the show. Noel's going to have five Hawks true and false questions for me on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. All right, when we get back, let's shift gears a little bit. Again, special guest coming up, David Sampson, host of the Nothing Personal podcast and one of the best baseball insiders in the country, former Marlins team president. What's up with the Braves, man? They haven't really done anything. They got Jurickson Profar. Is that doing it for you? I mean, he's a good player coming off a career year, but you feel comfortable going up against Philly and the Dodgers and the Yankees? We'll talk to David about that next. Chris Thomas just getting rolling, hanging out with you till 1 o'clock on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back with you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Going to chat with our buddy Joe Patrick coming up in less than 20 minutes from now. Miguel Almiron comes home to the MLS and Atlanta United. We'll get his take on that, plus the latest on the Falcons. But right now, we need to head out to the WadeFord.com hotline and welcome in our good buddy David Sampson, host of the Nothing Personal podcast, one of the best baseball and business podcasts out there, part of the Lebatard and Friends Network. David, appreciate the time this morning. Let's start with the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and that is what the Los Angeles Dodgers are doing this offseason good for both the current health and the future success of baseball by spending at this clip?
Well, that's such a long question. Let me start by saying that, A, good morning, and B, my view of the Dodgers was the same as my view of the Yankees when I was president of the Marlins. They're not breaking any rules, and they only have 25 roster spots. Although today it's 26, but back then it was 25. So they can only sign and have active 26 players. And if they want to sign everybody, they can't. So it's up to my GM and my baseball people to find players who can compete with them. And there are more than 26 great baseball players in the league. So I really don't view it as stopping my ability to win games. Am I upset that their payroll is that much higher than everybody else's? Well, they've got a huge luxury tax to pay, and they're following the rules. If I don't like it, I need to work with other owners to fix the rules.
When it comes to teams like, I don't know, the Pirates, the Reds, the A's, you know, how do those owners and those team presidents, people in your position, how do they couch the messaging to their fans about what realistic expectations are when they can spend some of those franchises, David, literally a tenth of what the Dodgers are spending?
You know, it's interesting. I was always president of a low payroll team, so I would always say to our fans, listen, we are responsible to give a team that will perform and that will entertain you and that will win games. And when it doesn't work, we'll fire managers, we'll fire GMs, or I'll myself get fired. But we're not going to use payroll as an excuse. What's interesting is that large payroll teams have never done that. But Hal Steinbrenner did that this week. He actually said to the Yankee fans, listen, we're not the Dodgers. And what the Dodgers are doing is not very good, not very helpful, but we're better than we were last year without Soto. And he started making excuses the way we used to as a small payroll team. And I thought that was a pretty interesting moment from last week.
Yeah, I agree. But I would also agree that, David, I think the Yankees are better than they were last year without Soto, because they were able to turn that into three and four different pieces that will make them a more complete team and maybe not be a team that gets their head handed to them by the Dodgers if they reach the World Series again.
You know, the irony is that there's no such thing as a super team in baseball. It's not like basketball where you can get LeBron and Wade and Bosh, or you try to put people together and it guarantees playoffs and really guarantees a deep run in the playoffs. Baseball is never that way. Just go back to Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani on the LA Angels. They never won one playoff game together. So just having Soto is not enough. The Mets payroll is down like $70 million from last year, and people aren't focusing on that. And so let's just look at the Braves as a great example. Are they in a position where they're so much worse having not given Max Fried $200 million? And I would say that I'd rather have Max than not, but I wouldn't have paid that amount of money for him.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. That just was never going to happen. Even speaking of $70 million, David, you could have chopped $70 million off that $200 million, and then the Braves still wouldn't have given him that offer. That was the amount of money they offered to Freddie Freeman, which, based off of his time and with the Dodgers, is a slap in the face compared to his relative value. We are talking with David Sampson, the host of the Nothing Personal podcast, former Marlins team president. All right, let's stick with New York before we head to the Braves. A couple of Braves questions coming your way here. Pete Alonso. Why are they arguing over seemingly $5 million? And for those who aren't following, Pete Alonso and his camp were reportedly offered a contract in the neighborhood of 3 years for $70 million. They countered with $75 million, and there's appears to be a lot of consternation about an insignificant amount of money.
Well, first of all, I don't view $5 million as an insignificant amount of money, but I also listened to what Steve Cohn said when he wasn't happy with some of the provisions that Scott Boras wanted, which Scott Boras called normal and regular and standard. And I will tell you that anything Scott Boras asks for is not normal and regular and standard. He's always trying to change and push the envelope and make things way more pro player, which is his right, but it is the owner's right to say no. And Steve Cohn seems to be making a stand and waiting for Scott Boras to blink. And let's face it, Scott Boras has not handled Pete Alonso correctly. He promised Pete Alonso something that he couldn't deliver. And instead of swallowing his pride and doing what's best for the player, which Scott Boras will never do, he will only do what's best for himself and his reputation. That's what leads to this sort of problem with Pete not being signed. This will end with Pete signing with the Mets, and this will end with Steve Cohn getting his way, because Pete Alonso is going to wake up one day and look at his agent and say, wait a minute, you're not representing me properly. You're representing yourself. And that'll be the minute Pete Alonso signs.
Do you think there's anything to, I heard this on another show, so I'm borrowing somebody's take here, but is there anything to the fact that Steve Cohn could potentially be saying to Boras, hey man, look, we just signed Juan Soto. Can you cut me a break here on this other guy?
So I've had multiple players with the same agent, and we just, you don't do that in the real world. It's not even part of the conversation or the negotiation. You don't say, hey, I did X, therefore help me do Y. The only place in baseball where that happens is in the Dominican with international young players, where you say to a Busconi, who is just an agent without scruples, that's hard to believe. That seems oxymoronic. But what you say is, hey, we want to sign this guy, and in return, we'll also sign his brother, his cousin, and his third cousin. And so you take a bunch of guys and you do it that way. But it doesn't happen in the big leagues.
All right, so when it comes to what's going on here in Atlanta, the fear for the Braves right now is that they just haven't done enough to compete at the level of maybe the Phillies, the Dodgers, the Yankees, because that's where the standard is here in Atlanta after 2021 and the subsequent season. So the starting rotation may be a pitcher or two short. We could use an upgraded shortstop. They did just sign Jerickson Profar coming off a career year, but he's not a player that's typically an all-star caliber player, although he was one last year. What do you make of where the Braves are right now in the pecking order of the National League?
I'm worried that Alex, who gets the benefit of every doubt, in my opinion, and should get the benefit of every doubt, the GM of the team, president of baseball ops, I'm worried that he overpaid Profar, and that's not like Anthopoulos. He normally doesn't take players on the high. And I totally agree with getting rid of Soler, and I also understand you're going to get Strider and Acuna back, but you're also worried that you're not going to get anything out of Sale because he's so fragile. On the other hand, you don't want to chase ghosts. We did not, when putting together teams for 18 years, you're not putting on the board, well, here's the Mets, here's the Braves, here's the Nationals, and let's try to build our team to be as good or better than they are. Let's compare ourselves to them. We just make the best team we can with the payroll that we have from our owner. And I assume that's what Alex is doing as well. And when you know you're getting some help back, which, you know, from Strider and Acuna when they're done with their injuries, it sort of helps you in your offseason planning. So that's all I think is happening.
Would you transition Acuna to part-time DH when he comes back from this latest injury?
No, I wouldn't, actually. And I know it seems that you should, given the injuries, the two injuries he sustained at least. And I hope he doesn't become one of those players who just is, his career is defined by injuries and it takes away from the greatness, because he is one of the top five players, without counting in my head, I just consider him that, in Major League Baseball. But right now, he's tied for the worst player in baseball. And I put that as a category for players who aren't playing. Whatever the reason is, when you're injured, you're not helping a team win. Therefore, you're not a productive player. But when he is in uniform, he is in that top five, and getting him back is what matters. And you can't make a player not get injured. And I don't believe in moving a player to DH as a way to, oh, now we'll protect him from injury as he gets older, maybe, but certainly not yet.
What is the most difficult challenge year over year? Because the Braves are going through this right now with continuing to revamp and restructure a bullpen, because they lost a couple of key guys. Joe Jimenez, their setup guy, is going to be out, and AJ Minter is now with the Mets. So they do have some other guys that they're going to be counting on, and Dylan Lee and Pierce Johnson, but those are not the same caliber of back end of the bullpen arms, and they haven't added anybody yet. So what was that challenge like during your time as a president?
We just had to be so careful not to get swept up in off season. And we did a couple times when we signed Heath Bell to a long-term deal and got totally screwed.
Yeah.
The bullpen you build in February or January is not the bullpen you use in October. And what we always like to do is save some budget money to acquire bullpen help during the course of the season, but also have enough split deals. So we would try to get a bunch of guys at spring training and in AAA, because bullpen arms come and go, and you just want to find the hot guy for a particular season and ride him, and you just never know. There's so few players, bullpen arms, who are good year after year after year. There's a bunch, but not very many. Your best bet is to get upside surprise, and to get upside surprise, you need good scouting, and you need to have a good number of them, both in AAA and in spring training, to just have that depth. So I think that when you're building a bullpen for a team that's going to make the postseason, what you do during the course of the season, grabbing an extra hot bullpen arm from another team, is what you see most competing teams do, and that's the move that makes sense to me.
Wrapping up our conversation with David Sampson, host of the Nothing Personal podcast on the Lebatard and Friends Network. Make sure you check it out. One of the best business and baseball podcasts going.
Thank you.
Yeah, also the former Marlins team president, Chris Thomas, with you till 1. Before I let you go, David, the regional sports network thing is just always so fascinating to me. We just found out this week that FanDuel Network, the new home of the former Bally's Network, where the Braves and many other teams, they just laid off 100 more employees to try to restructure and gain more of a capital perspective in terms of revenue. What do you make of the future of how you're going to be able to watch these games? This model just doesn't seem sustainable based on what's happened over the last couple of years.
No, the RSNs are done. And the fact that they got out of bankruptcy was with a short-term plan, and they're going to try to make it long-term, but it's not going to work. All the deals they did with MLB teams are short, some of them just lasting a year. MLB would like to get all of the rights in-house and sell more of a national package that includes streaming. That's what NFL does. That's what the NBA really has moved toward as well. And it's an amazing equalizer, because these teams that have funded so much of their expense through RSN revenue, like the Red Sox with NESN or the Yankees and Mets with YES Network and SNY, those networks just are not throwing off the cash they used to, and that is impacting how teams are acting. The one exception, and we started the show with this, the Dodgers, their RSN deal has not been impacted by the real world changes, and they have an overmarket horrible deal that if Comcast could, they get out of it, but there's no way to get out of it. There's no way to declare bankruptcy. And the Dodgers have this amazing source of cash that the rest of the teams just don't have. And that's just the reality of baseball at the current moment.
Yeah, I find it fascinating. It'll be interesting to keep tabs over the coming years as baseball looks to get its streaming situation sorted out. David, appreciate the time. As always, we'll chat soon as the baseball season ramps up.
I look forward. Have a great rest of the show. Take care.
All right. That is David Sampson, again, host of Nothing Personal. Make sure you check that out. One of the best informational and baseball podcasts going. Really good insight. If you ever have a curiosity like I do about how we're going to watch these games, man, in the future of streaming and everything like that. How much is it going to cost us? David always does a great job of breaking all that kind of stuff down for you on his pod. All right, let's talk some Miggy. Miguel Almiron coming back home. Man, that was a scene at the airport, wasn't that? And then what's the latest on the Falcons after Jeff Ulbrich spoke to the media this week? Joe Patrick is coming up next. Just getting started with you. Chris Thomas with you till 1 on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Auto. Coming up in less than 20 minutes, Noel White is going to help me make sure I still have a girlfriend by the end of next month. You don't want to miss it on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas with you till 1 o'clock. Caleb Johnson comes your way then. He'll also join me at 11:20 to talk about what to do next for the Hawks. One team that I know exactly what they're doing, that is our Atlanta United. They welcome back Miguel Almiron with a Kings welcoming at Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our buddy Joe Patrick. Joe, have you ever seen a scene like that? He got a hero's welcome. It was crazy.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I had never been part of something like that before. I feel like Atlanta United fans have done something similar before, but Chris, like, you know, so obviously the fact that there are people there meant that people knew that it was happening, but only a select few. The club kind of leaked it to some supporters club leaders in hopes that they would only have about 150 people there to greet him, because they didn't want too many people for it to be a security concern. And I can tell you, it was probably double the 150, which just goes to show, you know, just what Miguel Almiron means to the team. I even saw people who were getting off flights who saw the people congregated waiting for Miguel, who then just decided to stop and wait themselves because they were Atlanta United fans, and figured, hey, I'll just, you know, spend another 30 minutes here at the airport to see Miguel Almiron. And the other thing, Chris, is, you know, this team reportedly could be spending a league record transfer deal on a player to come in who could be, you know, will certainly vie for MVP if he's able to stay healthy. But even he is not going to get the kind of reception that Miguel Almiron had, you know, this weekend. And that is really because of what he means in the hearts of all these Atlanta United fans, many of which, you know, maybe he was kind of the first player that they ever knew to kind of get that feeling inside of them as they watch the game. So just a really, really cool scene, and couldn't be happier for Miguel, for the club, and for the fans, to be quite honest.
Yeah, love all of that stuff, but let's get down to brass tacks. What can we expect from him on the pitch?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's going to be a slightly different player, you know, just in terms of, like, he probably doesn't have the same amount of, like, pure speed and athleticism. I mean, something that I think about of what he did for those championship-winning team, that championship-winning team that he played on, was he connected the game to Joseph Martinez. No matter where Joseph was and wherever Miguel was, Miguel could always pick up the ball and carry it 50, 60, 70 or more yards upfield just by himself, and then get Joseph involved in the game in the dangerous areas. And I still think that while he may not have the speed that he did that, at one point, he still is a pacey player for sure. But he also just has that mentality of wanting to challenge opponents, wanting to challenge defenders, put them under pressure, make them make uncomfortable decisions, do I or don't I types of decisions. And that's the kind of impetus that you need in the team that is ultimately going to be able to break down the opponent. I think that's something that frustrated Atlanta United fans over the years, is seeing a team that, you know, wanted to play perfectly and try to build up, you know, with precision, and then find those final passes exactly like they'd practiced it. And sometimes you just need more of a battering ram like Miguel Almiron, not necessarily in the way that he is physically, but just in the way that he's going to force the game onto the opponent. And I think that that is what Atlanta United fans recognize that he did in the past, and looking forward to an Atlanta United team that can do that once again here in the future this year.
If the rumored other transfers in are completed in the next coming days or weeks, what will the squad look like as a whole? How different will it be from just a few months ago when last season ended?
You know, it's not going to be a ton different in terms of the names that you see, because, you know, this team has really only added a few players in this window, but they are massively important players, obviously. And, you know, the player that we're talking about, the one who I was, you know, kind of mentioning is Emmanuel Latte-Lass, a striker from the championship in England, and, you know, a really ascending player and someone who profiles very, very well to come into MLS, having dealt with the kind of physicality over there. And so if you're able to bring him in, again, like I said earlier, he's a guy who will immediately be vying for MVP, Golden Boot, these types of things. The same exact kinds of production that Atlanta United got from Joseph Martinez. And I know it can sound kind of sacrilege to say a player is going to come in and be like Joseph was because of how indispensable Joseph was for Atlanta United. But I really think that this is a team that is as talented, especially in the attack, those front four positions. When you talk about Sabalob Janice, Alexi Maranchuk, Miguel Almiron, and if it is Emmanuel Latte-Lass, him, I think that's a more talented front four than this team has ever had. And, you know, they might have not be as strong in some of the center back and midfielder spots like they were when the year they won MLS Cup, but it should make for a team that scores a ton of goals and is really exciting to watch this season.
All right, Joe. Now to the other team, as we're talking with our buddy Joe Patrick here on Sports Radio.
Happy window, sad window.
Yeah, on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I will say this. When Jeff Olbrich spoke, the one thing that I was very happy to hear is that he went out of his way to say, I'm not going to be a mouthpiece for Raheem Morris. I'm not going to be a coddler for Raheem Morris. In fact, that so much bothered me during my time as a head coach in New York, I'm going to make it a point to not do that. And that was my biggest concern about bringing in a guy like Jeff Olbrich, was his relationship with Raheem being too close to the situation. So that was my biggest takeaway from the press conference. What was yours?
Yeah, and I think that just to add on to that really quickly, Chris, is that, you know, it speaks to the experience and kind of wisdom that he gained as being an interim head coach for the Jets, like he was. That's when he started talking about that, about, you know, one of the problems when you step into the head coaching role is you get too many people who all of a sudden start saying yes to you and start agreeing with everything you say, and they just look at you differently. And to your point, like, he's kind of vowed to not be that guy and to I think he said, like, you know, tell the hard truth and those kinds of things. So looking forward to that. I think, Chris, you know, the thing that stood out to me from his press conference and really made me, you know, excited about what he could potentially mean to this defense is just the way he talked about the game tactically and how important that is to him in terms of being able to find tactical answers, especially in game, for what opponents are throwing at them. Because so often in the NFL, you go into a game, you prepare as best as you can, and then you inevitably see new things that the team has never showed. And so you have to be able to adjust on the fly. And it's a lot easier to say you can adjust on the fly than to actually have your players in a mental headspace where they are able to, you know, pick up some different instruction or be able to run something differently and still be able to play to the best of their ability. And I think that I just never really heard Jimmy Lake speak in those terms about, you know, having players ready tactically. It was a lot of more of, you know, the, you know, we need to, you know, play with certain mentality and do all those kinds of things, play harder or play stronger or whatever. But it wasn't about, like, you know, what tactical adjustments can we make? And not to say that there weren't any of those happening, but I think that Jeff Olbrich just brings a different perspective on just how you go about playing defense, essentially. And I think that this is going to be a group that is improved and is just better coached. Chris, just in talking to some of the players over the course of the year, you know, and it's just kind of in inflections and reading in between the lines of things they say and everything. But I got to say, I just never felt like the players had a lot of confidence in what they were being asked to do on the field. And, you know, it was even got to a point where I think Mike Hughes said it. We were probably 5-6 games into the season where he said, you know, once the coaches kind of figure out how to best use us, we can be really good. And I don't think that the players ever felt like they got to that point. And that goes for guys on the back end, like Mike Hughes mentioned there, goes to guys on the front end who maybe, you know, felt short shrifted because of the defensive line rotations or whatever it may have been. So I think that Jeff Olbrich is hopefully going to have an opportunity to sort out a lot of these things, sort out some of the issues that some of the players may have had, and just, you know, get on the same page and try to put together a cohesive group that I don't think anybody expects to be some sort of top 10 defense next year. But I think you got to feel similarly to the way that fans felt going into this year, which was that if you can have kind of a middle of the road, you know, average NFL defense, I think this offense under Michael Penix is set to kind of explode next year. And so if you get that, then I think you're going to have the building blocks of a successful team.
He mentioned also during the press conference, as we're talking with Joe Patrick on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, this digestion period that they're about to go into, that they're going through right now, where they're going to take 2 full weeks and just break down tape, watch every play from this year, and then make their decisions about how they want to move forward into next season. What players do you think are going to stand out that you may feel like they're going to say, you know, maybe that's not somebody that we think should be part of the long-term plan, and including maybe some guys that fans love?
Yeah, no doubt about it. And he spoke. I mean, I think the name that keeps coming up when we talk about these things is Grady Jarrett. And it's the toughest, you know, decision for this team because of everything that he means. And, you know, the stuff when we talk about that, like the stuff that he means off the field, like that is not nothing. Like that is important stuff. And while you do have to prioritize what players are giving you on the field, you know, and I'm not talking about necessarily what Grady means, like to the community and everything, which is great. But I'm talking more about the way he leads that locker room and the belief that the other players have in him. Almost, it's almost like he's a coach in terms of the respect and reverence that other players have for him. And as a player who's, you know, been a lifer with this Falcons team, and a player, you know, that can come with some negative connotations as of late, but he's also a player who's been to a Super Bowl with the Falcons. So he has experienced success as well and knows what is a good defense and what is a good team and what is not. And so it's such a difficult situation for him because obviously he's an aging player and you're probably getting diminishing returns from him. And so I don't think they're going to straight up cut him, but I do think that you could very well see, you know, his contract reworked, probably not like a full restructure, but maybe actually even a contract extension where you can change his number a little bit. But I think that he's going to be obviously one that this team looks at. I think along that whole defensive line, Chris, you know, there's players like a David Onyemata, again, who's a starter for this team, kind of in name, but ultimately, is he actually good enough to be your starter? And you drafted players in that position behind him who are fresh and young and ready to come in. I think that he's going to be another one. And I think that some of the bigger questions are going to be kind of more in those linebacker positions. What's the future there? How do they see Troy Anderson? It's hard to judge him because his issues have really been more injury related than anything else. Another name I would throw out there, it's not necessarily a decision they have to make because he's out of contract, but Justin Simmons is one who I don't think that they will necessarily love what they see, especially because I think Ulbrich prefers a more athletic defense over anything else, and he's going to kind of prioritize that. And so, you know, these are going to be some of the big questions they have to make. Also, I mentioned Mike Hughes earlier, that cornerback position, who do they want out there? I think that last defensive coaching staff, Jimmy Lake, they liked Mike Hughes out as that wide corner opposite A.J. Terrell. What he's shown in his career shows that he's nowhere near the cornerback he is when he's playing in the nickel. So how do they go about that? Do they just go about addressing that nickel spot and leave Mike Hughes on that side, or do they want to replace him completely for some different personnel? There certainly are lots of decisions to be made after they break down this tape.
Is there any room, given their current cap situation, for them to sort of take another hack at a guy similar to a Matthew Judon, or is that just out of the question?
I really don't think there is. They're basically at the point now where they have to open up space before they could do anything, and so they're going to have to, you know, do some of this stuff. And then they still have positions that they're going to need to address who are going to, like, you know, be primary starters and things, and they're down draft capital obviously for this year. So I think it's going to be hard for them to find somebody like that. And Chris, I also think they might be a little bit, you know, gun shy to do something like that again, considering how these last two have gone. And maybe there was a reason why Matthew Judon and Justin Simmons, obviously kind of acquired in different spots. Justin Simmons was a free agent signing and Judon was a trade, but you know, maybe there's a good reason why sometimes those players are still left out there. And while they can be good guys for the locker room and you can make the argument for them, you know, if they just don't have what it takes on the field, it's hard to justify, you know, spending, whether that's draft capital in a trade or even just free agency money, which is going to be very much cherished by the Falcons front office and the way they're going to have to build this roster coming up for next year.
All right, Joe, before I let you go, there's been so much posturing about Kirk Cousins and will they, won't they? Is he going to stay? Are they going to pay the $10 million? What have you surmised from everything you've heard? What do you think is the most likely thing that happens?
I think the most likely thing is that they pay the $10 million on March 17th and they keep this thing rolling and they continue to try to look for a trade partner for him. If unless they can find some trade before then. But it's harder for me to see a trade materializing before then. But I think once you come out of the draft and teams get kind of a clearer look at what their roster looks like, and then maybe you have an injury or something prop up with a team, you know, there are going to be quarterback needy teams. And, you know, people think it's crazy to trade for Kirk Cousins, but he's not going to be crazy expensive for the team that trades for him. So, you know, he's going to be cost them about $25 million, which I think is the going rate for an average kind of NFL veteran quarterback, or at least one that you would deem to be starting caliber. And obviously, while he kind of lost it last year, I think that the Falcons and other teams can maybe convince themselves that, you know, another year off the Achilles, he won't kind of run into some of the problems he had last year. So I fully expect them to keep him on the roster. Otherwise, Terry Fontenot wouldn't come out and say what he said so bluntly. So I expect them to play hardball here and try to find a trade.
All right, Joe, let's focus on those five stripes, huh, for the next couple of weeks. Good momentum. Appreciate it, man. We'll talk soon. All right, that is our good buddy there, Joe Patrick, on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. When we get back, going to let you hear some of the best that the NFL had to offer this week. A lot of really good sound. Noel and I will chop that up. But before we do that, we're opening up the relationship therapy couch. You're not going to want to miss this. I got something for Noel that I need her help on, that I know she's going to set the record straight for me. She's going to help me potentially save myself from a very disappointed girlfriend that I'm going to try my damnedest to prevent from happening. You don't want to miss that. 1 hour in the books, two left to play. Chris Thomas with you on a gorgeous Saturday in the A and the great state of Georgia on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.